Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
We are back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the Theater Arts and Culture Podcast for the Twin Cities and beyond. I'm Kevin Couchman, rejoined by the singular Amanda Forstrom. Mari's going to be joining us soon. I think she's still saving daylight time, I think is what's happening for Mari. But she will be here. Amanda, how are you?
I'm doing well. I mean, it is 6:30 instead of 5:30, so we're dealing with that. But, you know, other than that, doing well. So
totally. And I'm going to the origin of time. I will be in London, England tomorrow for a production of my play Moderation. I'm very excited to be going. I will report directly from Greenwich Mean Time soon. We're joined by director Hans Bladel. And Hans is with us to talk about a production that he has coming up at Minnesota State University. He is directing Will Arbery's Heroes of the Fourth Turning. Okay. First, I want to hear from Hans. Hans, how are you? Welcome to Mouthing Off. It's your first time. Come on in. The water's fine. How are you?
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing great. So I guess it's kind of a little introduction to myself. I am a Southern Minnesotan, born and raised theater artist, and I've spent most of my time kind of in academia stuff. So yeah, I'm currently down in Mankato, Minnesota, this is my thesis production. So thesis production of Will Arbery's Heroes of the Fourth Turning. So that's kind of where I'm at right now, middle of the production, trying to just get everything in order.
All right. Yeah. So let me run the plugs. Okay. Tickets are on sale now, March 26th to the 29th, 2025. And here is the synopsis. Set in a small town in Wyoming, the play takes place over the course of one night, bringing together four young conservatives at a backyard gathering, celebrating the appointment of their former professor, Gina, as the new president of a Catholic college. The narrative unfolds through a series of intense philosophical conversations that touch on politics, faith, identity, and the state of America. And if you want to find tickets, we will have a link in the show notes, or I'm sure you could just search Heroes of the Fourth Turning, Minnesota State University. Hans, what is the current state of America in 90 seconds? How are we doing? Are
Man, we going to make knows? It? what a loaded question. I don't even really know what to think. And I think that's maybe kind of the fear, right, is uncertainty just about everything. Something the play even touches on a little bit, and this has now been sort of helping frame my own brain, is it's the Strauss-Howe generational theory of the four turnings.
Right. I'm familiar with this. If you want to, yeah, go on.
Yeah. So basically, it's the idea that Western civilization happens in four cycles at a time, four different cycles. The cycle is called a saeculum. And in that saeculum, you can break it down into four different generations. It starts out with a high. It goes into an awakening, then there's a crisis, there is a unraveling and then crisis to follow that. And so I would say right now we're pretty firmly in a crisis, You go back 80 years from now, there, or from, yeah, from now, and you see that we're in World War II. Go back 80 years from then, we're in the Civil War. 80 years from then, we're in the Revolutionary War, and so on and so on and so on. And so it's been fun to do this show to kind of explore the state of America in that lens. I think it's very easy to get stuck into kind of this linear timeline of thinking, but that's kind of a
progress.
A newer
it's
invention.
A straight line. We're just heading. Yeah, what nothing could ever get worse. We're heading toward a brave new world. Amanda has her finger up.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, Kevin, Mari, Hans, does this make the meme, the hard times create strong men create good times create weak men create hard times.
Weak men create podcasts.
Yes, of course, and memes. And so Hans, are you telling us that's true to some extent?
Oh, I would say that's exactly what this is, just the academic version of it, or a academic version of it. I've heard there are maybe some other generational theories out there that also kind of purport the same thing. So we might just be onto something. How or who is telling us what that looks like just is a little different.
Hmm. All right. So it sounds like there's a cast of maybe four or five. For this, what's your approach to directing this? It sounds like it's a contemporary play, maybe addressing. Well, I mean, you hear about a play featuring young conservative people. We're already maybe a bit far afield from what people are accustomed to seeing in the theater. So, I guess, tell me a little bit about that. Why this play? Why now? And what's your approach to directing it?
Yeah. Super, super contemporary. It takes place in 2017, was written in 2019. And it is on kind of the eve of the Charlottesville riots, or it's the evening after. And so it's fresh in everyone's memory there. And that's obviously horrifying. So, you know, why then do a show that highlights conservatives, right? What does that mean?
Well, the winners, because now right. They're the great winners. They really are the heroes of the fourth turning, right? I mean, so, yeah, no, but go on. No, it's genuinely, and we, you know, this is a political play. We're not a political podcast. We just interview arts and theater people, but we're also not going to shy away from talking about it. I mean, if that's what the play wrestles with, I feel like I'd like to know what your opinions are. It's funny, too, because I'll just indulge me for 30 seconds here, but time has sped up. History has sped up. People have noticed this. Things have moved so fast. You say a play about 2017 written in 2019, and I go, oh, a period piece before the plague times. Do you know? And it's just so fast. So I see you nodding. Just talk more about this.
Totally. Yeah. I think that's absolutely true. And I think that is just more credence that we are in this time of crisis, right? Time moves slower when there's nothing happening. But all of a sudden, a bunch of things have kind of taken place. So yeah, I mean,
history's back on the menu, boys and girls.
Right. And I'm kind of sick of experiencing it. I remember being in second grade and being like, wow, I sure wish I lived in a historical period. And now I wish I could kind of maybe take that back.
Sure. Yeah. Be careful what you wish for. I mean, it's funny because we're all of a certain age here. I'm turning 27 years old perpetually. But like, you know, it's so interesting. Will we get to enjoy a period like that? Will we all get to go back to sleep now in our lifetimes? Or is it just, is the era of real politics and real history here to stay? I don't know. Does the play have any ideas that speak to that, Hans?
Well, the play says there's going to be a war. And that's predicted kind of by the Strauss Howe thing. So, you know, I guess buckle up if you're really buying into this theory. It's maybe a little encouraging to think of it in a cycle because, you know, we might be in a crisis now, but it's only about 20 or so years and arguably we're already 10 years into it. So there might be a high on its way and we have something to look forward to, right? There's some encouragement in that. But yeah, you know, you had mentioned a little bit about how these are, you know, the winners, the heroes, right? And I do think it's funny to kind of take it in that way. The play is a little tongue-in-cheek about it, but at the same time, it offers these politics completely unchecked. There is no foil. They're at each other's throats thinking of, you know, talking about ideals of what conservatism should look like or what it even is. But it's you're expecting someone to come in and stop them, and no one does. And
that's refreshing.
It is maybe
refreshing in the theater, which has become a kind of progressive church in so many cases. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I completely agree. I think it really keeps you on your toes. When is it coming? And then it doesn't. There's maybe something a little bit, you know, Godot-esque in that. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, they do rip each other apart. There's a lot of infighting, but that's, I feel like, pretty accurate.
You're telling me there's a lot of infighting among conservatives. You know, it's an interesting time too, because it's, you know, you ask a lot of conservatives about the orange man, who's the figurehead for global populism. Many people don't even consider him a conservative.
Well, the play touches on that too.
And it's, so what are we, you know, is it just anti-liberal populism that we're experiencing, right? And then what does the future of a real American conservatism look like? I think a lot of people are kind of wrestling over that, but also there's so much bitterness that's been built up that similarly, the same people are saying, whatever it takes, you know, it's our turn to dish it out now. You see a lot of that. And I'm torn on it sometimes, because it's like, how far can just like revenge take you? Like, at a certain point, we need to do something constructive, and somebody's going to have to reach their hand across the aisle at some point. But again, what are your thoughts on all of that, Hans?
Totally. Yeah. I unfortunately think this sort of thing is inevitable. The more and more you keep pushing the envelope, and especially in such a binary political system like America's, someone's going to snap and it might even betray your values, that you've held up until that point. But someone will lash out, and we're seeing a conservative lashing out now.
Without a doubt. And Amanda, I see you want to get on just one quick thought here too. America is just so good at eroding the values of the people who come here and reshaping it. That's almost sort of what the country is great at, for better or for worse. It's like, you're going to come to America and close your eyes and open your eyes. And do you think you're going to recognize your descendants after three or four generations? No, they're going to be Americans. And so it cuts both ways. Amanda, you had something.
Yeah, I'm just curious about some of the cultural or texts that you used for dramaturgy in the play, because I feel like there is such a binary, as you said, in American politics, and people are pushed into these little, you know, smaller and smaller corners, you know, and you have to think this way, or you must be thinking the other way, if not my way. And, you know, people are so multifaceted, and, you know, from religion to skin color to, I mean, even region, you know, people are so different from region to region and how they grew up. And so I'm interested in kind of what you dove into that, what, you know, that supported the play.
Yeah. So I should mention, there is kind of another undercurrent to all of this, and that is the liberal arts, and specifically framed in a Catholic sense, which I find fascinating. I find Catholics in general fascinating. I myself am a Lutheran, so I don't really have much skin in that game.
All right, this podcast is over.
Yes. Hans, I finally have a guest who can, we can beat up on Kevin together.
Press
I myself
to
was
spit.
Raised Lutheran.
Let's do it.
Okay, fun.
We're nailing Hans, I can't help to this baby.
I can't help but notice you're from Southern Minnesota. You're a Lutheran, and you have a Green Bay Packers helmet over your shoulder. Are you just a natural sort of a contrarian, or what's it going to take to bring you back? I mean, what's it going to take to bring you back to Mother Church, Hans. That's what I'm asking.
Swim the Mississippi?
to be a Vikings fan, naturally. But no. Go on. You were lavishing praise on Catholics.
Keep going. Yeah. Well, I think, I guess if we're looking at religious political sense, I actually feel like I am aligning more frequently with Catholics than with evangelicals. And so it's an interesting kind of, I don't want to say obsession, but camaraderie, I feel, with Catholics. And so this play naturally stood out to me. And so conceptually, bringing in the Catholics, bringing in the liberal arts as this concept, I'm trying to explore the unities, the transcendentals and the unities that they kind of bring. So for those who maybe aren't as familiar, transcendentals, when I'm speaking of those, I mean truth, goodness, beauty, and then that kind of, you know, meanders its way into unity, but they're all properties of being alive. And so I'm not ever going to say I feel like I have a perfect understanding of these transcendentals, but I feel like I have a pop understanding of these transcendentals. And so exploring, these things that transcend ourselves even in such a very, I guess I would say earthly context of these conversations happening. There's kind of a cool juxtaposition there. I guess to answer your question, Amanda, it's maybe been a little less political and more religious for me. Hmm. Other things I've referenced, you know, it's not academic, but you know, I do occasionally like perusing the former Twitter of X. So I think that kind of has a interesting finger on the pulse of where things are at right now, and is weirdly kind of still pertinent to this show.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about Rope, another play with a couple of young, I don't know if they're conservatives per se, but young people and dealing with their professor. This sounds like a different play. This isn't a murder mystery. It sounds like this is sort of a thought-provoking play. So getting into the question of rehearsing, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that the actors don't all share the politics of the characters they're portraying. It would be impossible. So how are you finding working with the actors on this sort of play of ideas in this very politically loaded moment? The NASDAQ went down 4% today. I'm beginning to think that we got fooled again. Have you seen these memes, fell for it again award, this meme?
Yes, I have indeed.
And I understand it's extremely complicated, but yeah. So how are you dealing with the actors in those terms?
Yeah. It was, I will just say it was difficult finding a cast. I had 13 people audition for me, in a department of a couple hundred students.
Oh no.
Wow.
It's hard to do. And I wrote, you know, trigger warnings. And I think that was probably what did it. It's unsavory at times. And I want to make sure people are aware of that. I'm very happy with the cast that I have. Something you find in academic theater is it always kind of ends up coming out of the woodwork. Something works out. So
then I have to ask, as a follow-up question, how did you go about proposing this to the faculty, to the theater of department and dancer or what have you, and what was their response to it? Because I understand that Mankato is a fairly liberal town, although there are a lot of Catholics and like Catholic K-12 schools there. And obviously Gustavus is close by. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think they read it beforehand. So I kind of just pitched it and they're like, cool. is my Uh-oh. Impression of what happened. But I will also say too, I think there is a little bit of a, amongst faculty, they're going to be a little bit more comfortable engaging in these sort of topics. So I don't think even now there are really too many ruffled feathers. You know, it's about communication. A lot of this is, these are people we likely know. So how do we go about talking about the world with them?
Excellent.
Yeah, indeed. So what's the process been like in the room? How are rehearsals going?
You know, they're actually going really well. It's in academic theater, again, that's going to keep, you know, well, that's what I'll keep going back to. But academic theater is kind of, it's learning. That's the whole point of it. So you have a lot of green actors who have maybe never been on stage before, or maybe don't really understand the stakes. We've been working at getting off book, and we're finally kind of there, but it's go time. We've got a week and a half of rehearsals left, and we got to make that count. So it feels like it's a little scrapped together, and everyone I'm working with is learning. I'm learning. You know, now it's go time. Rubber's hitting the road.
Kevin.
Isn't Alexander Dugin, wasn't he? He's really interested in Strauss and these ideas of turning. I'm not really sure
if I know who you're referring to.
Dugin is like the court philosopher for Putin. He's like the big sort of populist. In any event, I'd have to look it up. Amanda, I know you have something, but I wanted to welcome Mari in too, because Mari popped in. Mari, we were joking that you were out there saving daylight, the time zone thing. We made a joke, but Mari, welcome on the show. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just over here trying not to say anything too unhinged about astrology in this conversation.
Oh, Mari, in our group chat that we have, where there's a special group chat we have, my wife is in there too, and we chat about stuff, and Mari dropped some predictions earlier this year, many of which are methodically starting to become true.
Yes.
And so,
Mari, you have to indulge us.
What is going on? What is happening?
All I will say is that plenty of the Strauss House stuff, even though it is only a theory, definitely matches up with the Pluto and Aquarius big major transit that we're going to be having for the next 20 years.
Oh, wow.
The last time was during the French Revolution and the first, like, 10 more years of chaos before we start to figure this stuff out. That's all I will say.
Wow.
That's thrilling. So, Hans, there you go. That's a way to get the students on board, the cast. Just consult
just
Mari, our Zoomer consultant. Yep. Yes.
That's right. Amanda, you had something you were going to say.
No, I was just going to ask again, Hans, where can people find tickets, and how long does the show run for?
Yeah, it's a pretty short run. We got 4 performances. You can get tickets at Minnesota State University Mankato at their ticketing website. I don't know what the exact URL is that I can give you, but you should be able to find them there if people are interested. So,
Do you think that the department is going to come and see it? I mean, I know how these things are, right? All of your cast, they're all going to have friends. They're going to bring their friends. They might bring family. What do you think the reception is going to be for a play like this?
You know, I think they will like being challenged. I think that that's kind of, we're interestingly, you know, in kind of a point artistically where the only way you can really actually challenge any norm is by challenging social norms. You can't really, I'm not saying that art is all exhausted at this point, but I feel like shock value has kind of become the expectation. and so
we're subverting expectations again.
right.
Like, we've been doing this for 15 years now. I've had all my expectations subverted. We now have a reality show person as president again, I guess.
Totally.
Right. Like, I, what expectations anymore? I think that's a good point. Like, who are you? A lot of that stuff coming from the left is they're like shaking a fist at a sky daddy who's no longer in charge. right? This resistance stuff. It's like, who are you resisting? You're like, BlackRock supports all your policies and opinions, right? Like, who are you res like fighting? You're fighting this imagine. It's very Freudian, isn't it? So yeah. He ranted.
So I was just gonna say that March 26th through 29th, and the website is mnsu.edu. And if you go to Heroes of the Fourth Turning, it is from 7:30 to 9:30 at the Andreas Theater at the Early Center for Performing Arts.
Wow, you are on top of it more than I am.
You're too busy directing.
Exactly. You're going into the tech. Your mind is elsewhere.
Amanda, you're a producer now. You get a producer. You should get a producer credit on this.
Excellent.
So Hans, this is sort of my maybe clumsy segue into another phase of questioning, just sort of about you and your background. But I'll start by saying or asking, why tell this story in the theater? What is it about this play? I have no doubt that the playwright wrote it as a play for a reason, but what is it about the theater that this play uses? It's not a movie, it's not a novel.
Well, I think this is a more direct route to talk to talk to the people who will listen. We're talking back and forth about subverting expectations, and this is, theater tends to love that, and they get it by having unchecked conservative politics thrown in their face for 2 hours. So I
Love
think
it.
that is why it's a show or a play rather than a screenplay.
That's fascinating, right? Because we assume this audience for theater is this sort of, at the very least, center left liberal, at the very least. But especially now, I feel like things are so topsy turvy that we're probably going to spend the next 5 to 10 years figuring out what that even means. There's no center anymore. So what does anything mean? I mean, I have this private theory that now I'll make public that, the next 10 years of American politics are going to be about redefining the center. And we really don't, because we have to all be able to get together at Thanksgiving at some point, or else the whole thing's going to fall apart. And I don't know what that's going to look like. But it's not going to look like neoconservatism. It's not going to look like neoliberalism. It can't look like the rabid populism that just won this election. It's got to be some other thing. And again, I don't know what that looks like. Maybe it'll be Catholic integralism, and we'll have finally the plot that we've been cooking in the basement of the cathedral will come true. It was an old joke from Fitzgerald's day, F. Scott Fitzgerald's days, where, the neighbor kids, they liked him, but he was Catholic. And then there was a rumor that they were plotting the overthrow of the government in the basement of the cathedral. And when I first heard that, I said, that's a great idea.
Right.
He
Well, wasn't
said,
that kind of like what people were worried about with JFK getting elected? I
of
think that was
course,
kind of
how do
central,
you,
yeah.
two loyalties, who's he going to be loyal to first, the man with the funny hat in Rome or his own country and blah, blah. But of course, we've since had another Catholic president, sort of. So who knows? There's no way to avoid talking politics on this episode, so I hope everybody is able to hang along. So Hans, that's a segue into saying, why do you do theater? Why do this weird, anachronistic? How did you get started? What are you passionate about in the theater? All of those questions. Maybe start with the beginning. Where did you start?
Totally. So the reason I kind of keep going back to academic theater is that's where I had my start from very, very young. My father, who people who listen to this podcast might actually know, Peter Bladel, is the theater chair over at Bethany Lutheran College. And so I
Oh,
that's I
you're a Lutheran Lutheran.
I'm a
You're
Lutheran Lutheran.
okay. I
Yeah.
gotcha.
You
Okay,
probably haven't
good.
heard of my synod, but that's probably okay.
Sure,
Oh,
sure.
is it Wisconsin or Missouri?
Oh no.
Neither.
Oh, uh-oh. Yeah,
Uh-oh.
no, it's associated with Wisconsin, but it's its own
Okay.
thing. Yeah. So, yeah. Which,
Okay.
Kevin, if you're wondering about the Packers, that's kind of
Ah, I
why
see.
I've got the
Okay.
display there.
I understand. Okay, all right. Yeah, you're
No,
literally
my father
the
married.
Lombardi Trophy Synod, the Lombardi Synod
Right. Yes, that's
Okay. So
exactly.
your father, so you're both you have theater in the family.
Yep, theater in the family. And then also, I don't really know what my grandpa was doing, my grandparents were doing, but they never did theater. And I ended up with an aunt who's doing some theater up in the Twin Cities too. She primarily works with the Phipps,
Oh.
helping out, I think just volunteering stuff. But
Cool.
so yeah, shout her out. Her name's Sarah Kessler. So Sarah, if you're listening to this. But anyway, yeah, growing up in Mankato, that was kind of just my taste of what theater was. And I have very distinct memories of being 3 years old and running up and down the aisles while my dad was trying to direct. And I'm sure I was probably annoying the heck out of him, but just the fact that he let me be there was just awesome to me. And I look back on that very fondly. So I naturally, after going through grade school and high school, I ended up in back at Bethany doing my undergrad there. Initially, I wasn't going to major in theater, and I started doing some of the plays and realized, no, this is what I want to study. It might not be what I do for my life, but this is, where I feel like I can academically excel, and it interests me. And I would do all the college theater things. We would do the regional Kennedy Center trip, which was always fun. And so, through there, I had a very liberal arts background to theater. So I still even kind of consider myself a jack of all trades and master of none. So I did a lot of acting there. Did scenic design, scene painting, sound design, kind of you name it. The one thing I feel like I kind of suck at still is costume design, despite having worked in a soup shop for like 4 years of my life. I have some of that tech background, and I, after leaving college, still had a craving for it. So I wanted to build up my resume. Went up to the Twin Cities, did some stuff around there. Worked a little bit with the Chanhassen Dinner Theater with their summer camps. I was kind of a guest artist for them, for the youths, and then with that I got involved. Maybe this is why I'm super interested in Catholics, but I got involved with some Catholic theater companies up there, like Miss the Boat Theater
Sure.
is a big
Yeah.
one,
Yeah, they came
right?
up. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was some cross-pollination. I never was on stage at Open Window Theater, but I've met some of the guys involved there.
Yeah, we had them on
Just,
recently. Yeah.
yeah, they're
Oh,
doing
great.
Tolkien right now. So,
Yeah, I want to see that one, so I'll probably have to jump up there. Yeah, filled out my resume and ended up back in grad school. I think I was a I think I lucked out with my timing on that. People weren't really applying because of the pandemic. And since then I've grown even more as an artist. I've found myself really enjoying puppetry. My dad and
Oh.
I write adaptations of shows together. So we did The Legend of Sleepy Hollow was one that we wrote together, and then we also wrote an adaptation of Pinocchio, both of which really heavily utilized. It's called direct manipulation puppetry. So it's kind of like you don't have your hand controlling. It's not like a Muppet, right? It's not like a hand and rod puppet, but instead kind of like a giant action figure, which I love growing up. So that seemed kind of like a natural way to pivot. And so I've kind of been doing some workshops with that for a lot of high schoolers that come and observe our department over at Minnesota State University, Mankato, and I've been able to direct a couple shows there. The Language Archive by Julia Cho was a big one, and then believe it or not, I I directed Lombardi by Eric Simonson. So
Called it. See, I knew.
gotta
I
just
knew.
keep twisting the knife a little bit more, Kevin. So
Well,
that's
listen, there's one of those teams has won the Super Bowl. So we'll
it's
just leave it
true.
at that. What is
Yeah.
this? What is Lombardi? Is it like a biographical play about Coach?
Yeah, it's a biographical
Fun.
show. It's not the next American classic, but it was the first show on Broadway that the NFL was a producer on. I think it's
Wow.
the only one, actually. So,
Well, and of course, now their entire product is a theater. So
oh,
yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
they got a little bit of a taste of it on Broadway, and now the games themselves are theatrical.
Exactly right.
Really cool. What do you so now looking forward, what do you hope to do with your career? Are there plays that you're desperate to direct in a professional capacity, or what do you hope happens next? How
You
much more
know,
time do you have in the academy?
well, this is my last semester in the academy. I am coming out of grad school in a very interesting turning point, and I guess this maybe helps button it into everything else. We're at a very interesting crossroads in academia. I want to teach very much. I would love to be a theater professor. And there's, I'm sure, some deep-seated thing about growing up seeing my dad do the thing where
Sure.
it influenced me. But I right now, left and right, we're seeing a lot of these programs, these theater programs at colleges close. And especially in more liberal arts settings, which those are kind of my two niches, I feel. So I don't know what the future has in store for me. I'm kind of maybe okay with that. It's, there's going to be more of a leap of faith. I'm currently working as a as the director of Res Life over at Bethany. In fact, that's where I'm coming to you live from right now. I've been able to pivot a lot of the skills I learned into that kind of gig. So I feel like I'm able to apply myself. But it's hard to know where to go from here. That's kind of what I've been struggling
Yeah.
with personally.
It's an exciting time, though. I remember coming out of grad school. I had absolutely no clue what I would do. I would just really strongly encourage you not to start a podcast. Just really want to avoid podcasting at all costs. I am only joking. I bet you could do a fine podcast one day if you decided to. But it really is. It's an exciting time. I remember it. And the MFA is an unusual degree, right? Because it is a graduate degree and it's a terminal degree. And so, yeah, I'm excited for you. You'll land on your feet. You'll figure out what you want to do. And the beautiful thing about theater is that it can always be done in poverty, like in terms of like. It doesn't take much to make a play, right? I bet you could probably stage a play you're doing now for next to nothing, probably, four chairs in a church basement. Fair to say.
Basically, yep, that's so true.
Yep.
Yep.
And I love that. And nobody, we're none of us are in this because of the money.
No,
Are we?
right.
No.
Well, and I, you're right. It totally is a exciting time. I think with the dawn of things like AI, there's gonna we, as with anything, there will be a strong reaction against it. And I think what that reaction is gonna look like is just in-person performances, watching people be people.
I'm really feeling the same way. I feel like there's going to be a renaissance in it, out of demand, for it. And I think that the audiences are going to decide that they've had enough propaganda and that they want to see real things from real people where they can trust and believe their eyes. I think that theater, the same way that vinyl made an enormous comeback, like notably, I think theater could see a similar thing. And I would love to see a renaissance in the American theater where we're staging plays in backyards and in church basements. And I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here. I've got everybody's nodding their head. But maybe for our audience who's just tuned in on 94.1 Frogtown Radio here in beautiful St. Paul, Minnesota, or online. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, what for you, Hans? What is the outside of it being part of the family business, right? Like, what's the case for theater now? You mentioned the AI, and all the rest of it. Why theater? Why now? Why more of it?
Well, I'm going to keep tying it back to the liberal arts and humanities. It teaches us very directly what it means to be human.
Yeah.
And if we lose a sense of that, then what better are we than an AI bot? I think there's already a stigma against AI. I think rightfully so. But if we're tapping into it, what makes us really any different than just spewing out some garbled thing we just Googled up? And
Mm-hmm.
yeah,
Yeah,
so
I
I
mean,
guess that's what's grounding me to it. that's what makes me feel, you know, it's the community, it's the experience of being able to be in the same room and feeling these palpable feelings. It's why I if I'm watching a movie, I'm going to react very differently to someone like crying on screen than someone crying right in front of me. And
Totally.
that's what draws me to it.
Yeah, and one of the things that I love too, and that I'm kind of wishing for to be a part of the Renaissance is smaller audiences. And instead of having this sort of big Broadway production value and using all this money and 25 people in the chorus, but putting on a play with 4 or 5 people, in the round in a space that's very familiar, so that when it's in front of you, it becomes very real, very personal, very quickly. And I, we're so used to the 2D, faces and like the, Kevin 02912 whatever at, on X or Twitter or whatever. And is that you? Is that your handle, Kevin?
Well, he's in the Kevin group chat. I'll let him know you mentioned him.
Perfect. Give him a
The
shout out.
international group chat of Kevin's, which I'm always
Yes.
talking about, right?
But I'm really looking forward to making it more personal and smaller audiences right in front of you. I'm talking We did a production of Kevin's play Moderation, which I highly recommend you read, Hans. I'm
I
sure the
actually went to
faculty
it.
would.
Well,
Oh my
Hans
God,
was
that's
there.
right. That's right. Oh my gosh. Apologies.
No, you're
Oh
good.
wow, that was a long time ago in October.
One of us, one of us, one of us.
But something like that where it's right, an actor is 2 feet from you. You can't ignore that. You can't block it. You can't turn the channel. You can't, which I just love. And as an mainly an actor, it really excites me more than being, on a stage and there's a blob of 900 people in front of you, and it's definitely more challenging.
Yeah. Mari, I feel like we're being teamed up on by the Lutherans. They're if another one shows up, they'll have a synod, whatever that is. And I'm just kidding. Mari, do you have anything you want to ask Hans about this production in particular or about his career?
I guess I'm really just curious because I think I might be the only one who's, besides you, Hans, obviously, who is familiar with this play. I mean, it was massively successful when it came out. I mean, it launched Will Arbery's career. He was a Pulitzer Prize finalist. It was produced by Jeremy O'Harris. I remember it was a huge deal. So I'm curious if anybody in your academic community had heard of it, if they were familiar with it, and I guess how people are kind of keeping up with the current playwriting scene and what's going on.
Yeah, that's a great question. I was surprised a little bit myself that no one else had heard of it. And we would occasionally have guests to campus who had mentioned it in passing, whether it's in just some presentation they were making or whatnot. But I don't know if anyone had actually read it themselves. They maybe heard the buzz, but they didn't really know what was in it. Which, I guess is fair being in flyover country. Yeah, I equally kind of as you are, Mari, was a little taken aback that no one seemed to know about it.
I was looking at
Yeah, I
the
guess it's
Wikipedia
just
just now
surprising.
and
I'm curious if, oh, Kevin, you go.
no, Mari, you finish.
I was just curious. I'm interested in sort of, I guess, in your academic circles, what kind of playwriting are people really excited about right now?
Oh, it's it's pretentious. It's because it is academia. So many people are still very hooked on absurdism, which who doesn't love absurdism until it just gets a little too absurd and maybe a little overdone. That's typically where a lot of people land and want to head, is more that direction.
Yeah, I think I knew that
Yeah,
this
I'm on
play
your side, I
existed,
think.
but it. Sorry, Mari, you're on a slight. I think you're on a slight
I was
delay.
just gonna say, I agree that I think a sort of intimate small cast realism is back. I think the pendulum has shifted.
Well, right, and it's borderline naturalism, which is kind of fun. I was toying with the idea of trying to bring in real grass. for the show, but decided against it, and it was probably going to put a hole in the budget. I don't have much budget to work with when it's a studio season show.
I harbor this idea about, I want to write a play that's explicitly about cryptocurrency, and there's a very famous story about a guy who has been going to the town dump every weekend for years because he threw away a hard drive with, you know, 1,000 Bitcoin on it or something like that. And I thought about staging it and bringing in some trash to try to make the theater smell like, you know,
yeah,
like,
right.
Like that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Really, really stick it to him. You know, I don't know if I'll ever write that play, but in any case, you know, I was reading the Wikipedia for this play, and it sounds like it did very, very well, which Mari talked about. It was well received both by the, you know, the people who run theater in New York City, and then the conservative media as well kind of embraced it as an example of maybe something that was even-handed, fair-handed. I see Steve Bannon's name is brought up. I mean, it sounds like it's a real slice of life of that moment. I'm really curious what it's going to play like to a Minnesota audience now, too. Again, it's a period piece now in only a few short years, because the year that this was written, Trump was still president. We had no idea COVID was going to happen. Since then, COVID has happened. The entire Biden presidency has happened, and everything that happened to Trump has happened. It's just crazy that things have moved this fast, isn't it? So I don't know. Are you wrestling with some of that about how, like, it sounds to me that it has to be really anchored specifically in a place and time. This isn't like Godot, right, where they're in this kind of liminal no place. It's a very specific place and time. What have you been doing with that in the room?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. It's funnily enough, in our most recent production meeting, my costumer's suggesting some slippers, and for one of the characters to wear, she needs to wear some slippers. And it's very interesting to me that styles have almost come around again to the point where it's like, oh yeah, that is like weirdly contemporary, even though that was a thing back then now. Mm-hmm. And they did go out of style even between now and then. So it's, I'm having to make decisions where it's a, can't go with that one because it evokes too much modernity, I guess. I maybe don't wrestle with it as much as you're suggesting, though I will say it's funny that there are some predictions that are made in the show, some things characters say where they've actually happened and come true. And I find that fascinating, that there's some fulfilled prophecies in it a little bit.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm reading that Arbery's father was president of Wyoming Catholic College, and that this is sort of like a play that he really drew from life. That's really cool. So the play is set in 2017, shortly after the Unite the Right rally, for people who maybe have forgotten about Charlottesville, what happened at Charlottesville, Hans?
Well,
and how is that reflected in the play?
There's only soft mentions of it. I think it's once or twice. There's an eclipse happening around that time too, in case you forgot that there was an eclipse going on back around during Charlottesville, which I guess Charlottesville, if you've forgotten, it's the tiki torches and driving cars into people riot.
Not peaceful, not mellow. Yeah.
Right. And there's this undercurrent of the supernatural happening throughout the play. Maybe that has something to do with the eclipse. Who knows? I guess I've kind of interpreted a lot of that to be some kind of demonic presence. I think it's appropriate with Catholicism being a theme there, and kind of their association with, you know, exorcisms and such. So that is
one thing that we're very proud of in the Catholic Church, is that when you need an exorcist, you're not calling the Presbyterians.
Right.
We
And
call
when
the
you call
Catholics.
the Lutherans don't brag about them, so they don't talk about it.
We'll brag about
Oh,
it. The Lutherans
Kevin,
bring. I got bodied. I got destroyed.
I was just gonna say, Kevin, we gotta have this guy on more often.
Oh,
I'm watching this
having
match
a
and it's
great
going
time.
great.
And Mari's just sitting back waiting for her chance to for her shot. That is really funny.
Well,
What would a Lutheran exorcism look like? That's for another episode. Go on.
it sure would. There'd probably be a potluck, I'm sure.
That's what I'm saying. We'd just be a hot dish, yeah. Bars.
And a quilt auction.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Some to raise money for the women's auxiliary.
It probably would work. That's the secret, you know.
I'm
Oh, I just
sensing a
feel better.
play.
I
I'm
feel
sensing a
cozy
play
now.
coming on,
You
Kevin.
know, the demons have fled, right? They cannot stand Lutefisk. Yeah, go on, finish your thought.
Well, I guess keeping it all tied in, the college, all these former alum have been to in the show, is based on a very real place. Like you mentioned, Will Arbery's dad was president of Wyoming Catholic College. In the play, it's Transfiguration College of Wyoming. But for all intents and purposes, they are the same place. And another reason this show continually piqued my interest is the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is actually doing their own classical college in Wyoming. So that, there is very pertinent stuff to even my intimate circles that we've talked about. And I've talked about with fellow church members about, okay, what is this place? There in the play, they touch on the Benedict option. Well, with my circle of friends, we've talked about the Benedict option, which, to elaborate a little bit, and really condense it, probably misrepresent it. It's this idea that what was it?
Rod Dreher.
Rod Dreher, thank you. Put together saying that Christians should turn inward and kind of focus on cultivating their own communities and then outlive secular society as it eats itself. And so that is a constant discussion for me and my church buddies. So it felt
Yeah,
very
there's a
at
lot of
home.
tension around that now too. This is what I'm talking about when I talk about the center not holding, and there's a lot of private discussions among different groups going like, how do we survive this? This is like some weird cultural sieve that we're going through. It's like, you know, who's going to be here to inherit this place 100 years from now? So that really is top of mind. Well, this sounds like a play that's loaded with ideas. You sound like the right guy to handle it, Hans Bladel. This is going to be at Minnesota State University, Heroes of the Fourth Turning by Will Arbery. It is going to be in March of 2025, four performances from the 26th to the 29th. I will put a link to the tickets in the show notes. Hans, thank you for coming on, mouthing off. You're welcome to come on anytime. Are you going to move to the cities when you're all done down there, do you think?
Who knows where life will take me? Probably not immediately, but you
Well,
never really know. So.
okay. Well, you know, there's a lot of Lutheran churches up here,
There
so
sure are.
you'll find a home, no doubt. I've got a play that needs puppets that calls for puppeteering. So if
Bring
you
me
ever
up.
want to, there you go. That's what I'm saying. Who knows? Maybe you direct that one day when we do it. It's kind of a it's an adaptation of a Russian folktale,
Cool.
Vasilisa. It's very, very cool.
I dig it.
Okay, Hans, one more time. What do you, I don't know, I assume maybe you like your cast is going to listen to this or some people at your university. So one more time in 90 seconds, give us the pitch for this show and say what you want to say, and we'll get out of here.
Yeah. So if you are at all political, which my guess is that you probably are, whether you like it or not, whether you land a little bit more on the left, a little bit more on the right. If you are looking for something that can start conversations, hopefully without going too far at each other's throats, this is the show for you. It dives into theology, politics, philosophy, the whole gambit. So if you are wanting to learn, or if you are wanting to figure out how to talk with people across the aisle from you, this might be a good place for you to start.